I would like to have your ideas about that.
To me, it's pretty clear what that march has been saying from day one. The consumer constituency that Bo has been trying to put together is a model that we like. This idea of putting together this new consumer thing that has its birth out of DFCC is simply a political attack to try and shut down what Bo is and the Australian group are starting. This is pure politics. No, is there another answer
I'm not thinking of? No, it's just out of the blue. And in my opinion, should be debated longly before that, not just present a couple of people that is trying to running something new and not debated. Who is our representative in the non-commercial? Who is our liaison?
Wolf.
Wolf? Who, the liaison? Where is Sherry? I need to go. Yeah, but they start at 11:15.
Yeah, you have 5 minutes.
Where did I put it? Get it. Yeah, that's the problem, Alan. Could you start? Well, the idea, anyway, let's start. The idea is to talk about one of the items that we're going to have in the 5 minutes is introduction of the consumer interest group, which has been formed in accordance with the NCSG proposed structural recommendation.
That's what's happening in the board NCSG.
I don't know what's going on there because I haven't heard feedback from that. So that's.
Let us start the discussion that we're supposed to be having with Hope Cheryl.
Okay, the issue on the table is the selection of the people who we will endorse for the affirmation of confirmations review team on accountability and transparency. We have 8 candidates so far. They're all posted. I'll put the link to it, if you don't know where it is, on the Adobe chat room.
Yeah, you send it.
The selection must be made by, I believe, the 17th or 15th of March, essentially a few days after the end of this meeting, since many people are going to be either traveling or still on vacation at that period of time. It seems to make sense that if we can do the selection during this meeting and ratify it perhaps in an ALAC call at the very beginning of the following week, where we can hopefully get quorum, we will have enough time to do this. Does anyone have a handle? Matthias, do you know what the date is that we have to have the affirmation endorsements done by?
17th,
okay.
And it's not a selection, it's an endorsement.
It's the endorsement.
Yeah, take care, Alan, with the wording, because selection will be made
by the chair
of the GAC and the chair of the board, and we have to endorse or not endorse.
If I use the word selection, I meant the ones that we will select to endorse.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, just arrived and I'm confused.
Okay.
Cheryl, before the bio break, you said, here's a list of people that have to come back, and the rest are encouraged to go to another room.
Correct.
You're now finding out the other room is probably going to be a closed meeting.
Well, then they'll be held to pay, and I hope they send all of our people back as a closed meeting, because the meetings are advertised as open.
It's open?
What?
Tina Dam, I can step.
Joined.
Hi, Tina.
Hi. I wasn't quite sure if you were still on break.
Open, let's go.
I thought
well,
I would try to dial in.
Technically, we are just winding down from a break. We're welcome. It's good to know we've got the audio bridge up and running and all well in the world. Makes me feel better anyway. We'd said to our people that it'll be, and I don't wear a watch, so I'm struggling to see, it'll be another couple of minutes before you start. So, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. I'll be on mute and I'll just wait for you to pop me in.
So, if it's open, and it's open?
No. And if it's not?
Yeah, I have only the board agenda, and the board agenda says nothing about. Normally, with the like in the ALAC or in the others, it's not open, but it's open better.
Okay.
Let's go there.
My old kings and gods and goddesses, people, don't leave me.
I'm getting used to hearing prayers this week.
Well, that's what I'm always telling you.
Let us try to start again. The submission of applications for the affirmation of confirmation review teams closed the other day. We have eight people who put their name in for endorsement by the at large, by ALAC. Our endorsement is due by the 17th. The at-large ALAC needs to decide what the exact details are of how we come up with this endorsement. At our last meeting, we deferred it to early in this week. The question for this group is, do we want to delegate the responsibility, or do we want a real vote of the ALAC early next week, prior to the 17th, or on the 17th. There will just not be enough time to look at the various details. We also agreed at the last meeting that we would ask all of the candidates two explicit questions and give them an opportunity to answer. That question has not been asked, so we're not in a position today or tomorrow to review all of the answers. So the question is, do we want a small group to make the decisions on behalf of the ALAC? Do we want a small group, and this is like the people who will be here through Friday, to make a recommendation to the ALAC for an ALAC meeting to be held prior to the 17th? I have a strong feeling, a strong personal position, that when you look at the applications, there are several of the applications from people who have had no experience whatsoever in ICANN. That may not be a bad thing. That, in fact, may be a good thing. But we also need to make sure that we have people on the review committee who understand the problems that we've seen over the years and make sure they're helped. There are some people who believe, we think, that these review committees should simply say, ICANN is doing a marvelous job, congratulations. I'm not one of those. So the question is, that we need to discuss and decide on at this meeting is, what is the process that we use to go forward? Question?
Thank you, Alan. First of all, it will be good if all the members of, at least around the table, have the link with the name of the people of the eight who would like to be endorsed by ALAC. The second point is that during the...
Just excuse me, I put that link on the Adobe chat.
No, because, I'm sorry, Adobe chat is not working as a chat.
Where would you like it put, on the at large?
Or Skype? You put it on Skype, or you put it on the chat, because it's a buy. But you can put both. My second point, and thank you, Alan, to give us this link. My second point is that during the presentation yesterday about this topic in a large meeting room, it's by the chair of the board and the chair of the GAC. It was quite precisely repeated that it must be people involved in our community. And my first question to the people around this table, to the ALAC plus chair and the leader of the region, it's which one of them they know as participant to at least some work at the regional level or at the worldwide level. And that could be a first thing. We could have two lists of people. Then we will have to discuss how we will handle the list of people who put their name and never show up yet, how we can involve them in the future work of at large. But that could be a first step. And then the rest, or the smaller list, we have to discuss that in more detail. And I would like to see if we are going to have a list with... I am not finding my word. A list with in an order, or just a list of people. I don't know if it's clear what I ask, but if we will put the first name, the second name, the third name in this order, or just a list of people.
The comment that was made yesterday is Peter assumed that any applicants would come from our community. Well, in fact, some of them have not. We still have the opportunity to look at them and decide whether we think they would be good review team members or not. That is our discretion. There are people, for instance, with internet governance experience, a fair amount of experience in the community, but not in ICANN. And there are also people with significant experience of review processes, but not ICANN. So I think we have to evaluate them all. Very similar to what Sebastian said, I would suggest that every person, once we have the completed applications, and we will hopefully in a few days, that every person look at the list and make any comments that you feel relevant. That is, you know this person and you strongly support them. You think this would be a horrible person for the review, and at no cost should we take them. And then we use that as part of the process in deciding what to do. Rose? Adam first, then Carlos.
Hello. Bertrand raised the issue yesterday of experts that are also to be put forward. So perhaps we can look at it in that light, that we can have people who we feel can represent the ALAC, and it has been pointed out to me by many people that that is a key word, stepping back to earlier discussions. So we have people who can represent the interests of the ALAC, but we also have an opportunity to say, well, these are also experts. They are experts in review processes or whatever it would have been, you know, the other criteria you mentioned just then, Alan. So we could put forward sort of two potential slates. Representative ALAC, we like these. Others, these are skills the review committee should have. Diversity skills would be very important, I think.
Carlos?
Dos cuestiones. Primero, nuestro soporte, nuestra recomendación, obviamente puede ser modificada por el presidente del GAC cuando se decida quién va a ser. ¿Sí?
Well, of the names we provide, for this committee, the chair of the GAC and the chair of the board will select the ultimate list. And at this point, we are now pretty sure of having at least two people, maybe three, based on what was said yesterday in terms of the size of the overall group.
Me refiero a que pueden ignorar nuestro orden de prioridades. Bien, segunda entonces. ¿Cuánto de los ocho candidatos, how many of eight candidates, are or have knowledge about ICANN or no? ¿Ustedes vieron eso? Ya se analizó eso, yo no lo he analizado.
Yeah, I believe there are, of the eight, there are only two who, based on what they have said, have no knowledge of ICANN whatsoever. Two of them, one of those has a lot of internet governance experience, though. And two of them have... Can use the term ICANN in a list of meetings they've gone to, but have not been heavily involved in the processes, and I don't think are well acquainted with the organization and the transparency issues.
And there is a very good reason, I hope everyone has noted, and we will have to wrap this up in a couple of minutes because we need to move to Tina and Bart, so we'll wait till the rest of our maddening crowd returns. We might just break this conversation for Tina and Bart because there's a remote participation aspect to that and we need to run to the advertised time. But as the chair of the ALAC, and I happen to be that at the moment, has put in an application, I think it's important that I'm not seen as guiding our conversations. So I do want you all to know that I am declaring clear interest. I also need you all to know that the answer to some of the questions you're asking I do have because of conversations I've had with other chairs of ACs and SOs. So if I'm going to put something to you as a group, I'm putting it to you because I have knowledge that I wish to share with you to help. I'm not going to not vote, obviously. I'm going to vote the way that we are guided to vote by my region. But I think we need to be very careful what I'm saying and what I'm doing. I just want to make really clear that that's on the record.
Let me make a proposal which has not been passed by anyone, but just to put something on the table to criticise. I would suggest that we appoint a group of five people, one per region. Maybe it's the current XCOM, maybe it isn't, but people who can work at least until the end of Friday to review all of the proposals in detail and make a recommendation of what to endorse, how many, and in what order. And the order may not be honored, but I think it's important for us to put our preference down. In parallel with that, asking everyone on the ALAC and the regional leaders to provide any insight they can into the candidates.
Confidentially?
Confidentially, of course. And then we will quickly schedule a meeting to be held on or prior to the 17th, where we will formally vote on that process. We can skip that last one if the ALAC wants to delegate responsibilities to the group, but that's obviously a decision that has to be made. That's a proposal. As I said, I have not vetted that with anyone, but I think it's important to put something on the table so we can come to closure. Adam?
I think it's very important in this that the process will be documented. One of the things that you get with the nominating committee, any nomination type selection committee, is people will want to know why wasn't I selected and so on. And I think simply the fact that we're rushed and we're not able to provide references and all those sorts of double checks, if we can't select someone, then we can simply say, sorry, it's lack of information and rush, and we're going to do better next time. Because I think a lot of people are actually now saying we're being forced into a certain path of selection and say, we all know this, we're going to do better next time.
In the conversation that I had yesterday that was initiated chairman of the GAC to chairman of the ALAC to discuss the concerns that when I wrote with the chairman of the GNSO and the chairman of the CCNSO, we raised a whole lot of process and issue concerns. He's taken time to talk to each and every one of us. I guess he phoned Chuck. But what you're saying, I'm wanting to share, I hear nothing but intent to get it right, to learn from these experiences and to start proactively looking for the buckets that we can put people in, how those buckets should be delineated, what criteria needs to be made for the other reviews almost as soon as Nairobi's over and this first team starts. I heard nothing but commitment to let's get the process right next time. So I'm very confident that what we can also say to people who may not get endorsement for this occasion is that they are more than welcome and indeed encouraged to get involved and be involved in one of these future processes. So I think we can be fairly warm and fuzzy as well as real and embracing.
And we don't want to insult those selected by saying you were rushed through the process and we not actually like you very much, because it does have that double side to it, doesn't it?
Are there any comments on the proposal I made and views on should we delegate responsibility to the group or schedule a meeting to ratify or change the recommendation?
If I may, and declaring my role here as ALAC chair, we have the rarest opportunity we ever have. We have quorate majority ALAC in one geographic space, and I think the more we can work as a committee as a whole on this between now and the end of the week when we all fractionate, the better. You were talking about a small working group. I think if we can encourage each and every ALAC member here to be part of that, not just the XCOM, that would, I think, be a better thing, particularly since part of the XCOM has vested interest.
Then may I suggest someone be delegated, whether it's staff or a committee member, to send out a targeted question to the eight applicants saying the ALAC has specific questions that we agreed to in the last ALAC meeting, and we are giving them 48 hours to respond if they feel they need to add anything to their existing statement. And I would suggest that we do that no later than now.
think I'm probably being dense. Do we have the list of people who've applied and their statements?
I have put the URL in every possible mechanism I know of at this point.
That just means I'm being dim. So.
Skype the chat, or you can come write it down for my screen.
We will tattoo it on the back of your hand later, Adam.
It's right underneath the muscles, correct. Okay. Cheryl has suggested that in lieu of my recommendation, we work as quickly as we can and try to make a formal decision, which means make it by Thursday, which is the last time we formally meet. That doesn't give us very much time, given that it's Tuesday, to get the responses, but we can certainly try. Sebastian?
May I say first that I guess, Alan, you are the best to send the question to the candidates or to see with the staff to do that as soon as possible. The second point is that I suggest that we organize a meeting with at least the ExCom members, but open to all the at-large ALAC members, more if they want, like that as delegate by the ALAC, the ExCom will be able to work with the inputs of the other ALAC member. If the ALAC, full ALAC is in the room, it's great. If not, we can still process and go ahead. And I suggest that for this specific topic, Alan will act as a chair, because as our chair is, she is candidate, we need to have some process. And my suggestion is that Alan will be in charge of that on our behalf. Thank you.
I have no problem with that.
So do I.
I carefully have not put my name on this one. We have to stop now. I think we have an intent to try to make this decision by Friday, and if possible by Thursday. If it's clear we can't, we will come up with another process on Thursday. We now turn the chair back over to the chair.
Thanks very much, and thank you, Tina, for being online so promptly and us being very, very tardy. We had some, I will, however, give you the same excuses I've given every other staff member who's passed through these hello halls today. We had some rather difficult interpretation tool issues this morning, so we actually lost 15 minutes. So we had attempted to catch our 15 minutes back, but we haven't quite managed to do so. We're getting halfway there, though. Tina, thanks so much for joining us. Your slides are booted, and we're ready to roll.
Okay, thank you so much, and thank you for having me participate remotely. I wish I could have been there, but hopefully I'll see most of you at the next ICANN meeting, if not before, at some other event. So I know you don't have a lot of time, and I just created the three slides for this presentation to give you an update on the fast-track process. There's a lot of details in these slides that I'm not going to go into details of completely, but you have it for reference, because then I just want to speak for a couple of minutes and then see what kind of questions you might have, so that we can focus on the topics that are mostly interesting for you. So let's, with that, let's go to the first slide. The first slide is just a brief overview of where we're at with the fast track process. It's working really well. We find from the staff side, we have a total of 19 requests received. Four of those have successfully passed through the string evaluation phase at this point, and they're right now going through string delegation. And the 14 remaining requests are being processed actively. And just a quick note, sometimes you may hear a little bit of a higher number than the 19. That's if you count in spam or ineligible requests. So it's a total of 19 that are legitimate requests. They span over 11 languages, and we keep them confidential, and that has been quite a discussion point both in the community and in the media. There's a lot of interest in the remaining 15 requests, but per the process, we're keeping that confidential until the string evaluation is successfully completed.
And then, of course, some countries and territories will decide to make the information about their application or their request public, which is absolutely fine. And I think, you know, every country or territory will make their own decision on that subject. So the next slide and the third slide as well is just a brief overview of the experience that we have had on the staff side with the fast track process so far. And just to mention up front that there will be at least annual reviews of the process, but for the purpose of the Nairobi meeting and for the CCNSO IDN policy development for the long-term policy for IDN CCTLDs, we gave the CCNSO working group a quick overview of the initial staff experience so far. And these are the following topics that relates to. One is transparency, as I mentioned. It has to do with keeping the process open and transparent, but not posting information about requests until the end of stage two in the process. I know Bart is going to talk about the CCNSO IDN PDP right after me, but that's one of the subjects that the report that's out on that policy development is discussing at this point, is to try to release that information at a little bit earlier stage. The second subject is around community support. There's been a need to do some additional clarifications about the fact that there's a need for community support for the string in the string evaluation portion and community support for the IDN CCTLD manager in the string delegation portion. So you'll see that we're putting out additional blog posts and additional information on this subject to try to preempt any issues during evaluation of requests. And the last slide. First subject is we also have needed to do some additional clarification about when the IDN CCTLD manager needs to be identified, which is not until string delegation. Then there's the subject of variants, and I think this is probably one of the most important subjects for IDN activities going forward. Karen told you earlier today how we reserve desired variant TLD strings and we don't offer them for delegation at the time. So a solution for that is still under discussion, and we may need to do some additional analysis of D name, B name, and so forth on that subject matter. I imagine that's a really interesting subject for the at large, so I welcome any questions on that. But the last three topics on my presentation is disputes, where we so far don't see any problems because we haven't really had any high disputes in this process so far. Confusingly similar strings, where we also are putting out, I just posted the other day a blog post on how are strings defined as confusingly similar and some guidance towards that. And then management of spam or ineligible requests. And these last three topics were something that was not in the process in terms of policy, but it's subject areas that we had to deal with in an implementation of the process. So the last one, for example, we decided on the staff, over some experience, that it would be appropriate to give 3 weeks of notice for communication or close of the request. So that we, you know, spend time on eligible requests and not on the ineligible requests. And so, Cheryl, that's pretty much what I had. So I don't know if we're going to open for questions or if you have Bart to talk about the IDN PDP and the CCNSO first.
Actually, Tina, we do have Bart here, but I think things we also have some representatives from some of the CJK regions. We might stop right now and ask if there's any questions on anything you've raised, seeing this variance did come into that part of our conversation. Just looking around, I have Hong. Go ahead, Hong.
Well, I'm not going to repeat what I've said, and I'm not going to talk about CJK issues. So. I have one question on the slides page 2 and 3. On page 2, Dina kindly referred the confidential nature of the request. Of course, if the country or territory decides to publish their the screen they are filed for application, that's okay, but ICANN will not publish that. But on page 3, I guess it's slide 3, we can see about confusing similarity string, bullet point 3, the publication of evaluation details to come. Does it mean that if there is a string confusing similarity issue, there will be a kind of evaluation and the details will be published? So that will not be subject to the confidential requirement of the process. So, Tina.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. My slides are not specific enough on that. That bullet point that says publication of evaluation details to come really just meant that I was going to post some guiding information about how the DNS stability panel is making their decisions on whether strings are confusingly similar. And so I posted a blog post, I think 2 days ago. I'm a little bit time zone confused. I think it's 2 days ago on the ICANN blog. I posted some details around that. We'll see if that is sufficient or if there's any additional information needed on that subject, but that was what was meant with the bullet. So when I made these slides, I didn't know. I made these slides before I posted that blog post the other day, and so I wasn't quite sure when I was going to be able to post it, and that's why I just said to come as opposed to have been published.
Thank you, Tina. Hong nodded thank you as well, so I think we're all clear on that. Any other questions specifically for Tina? I see no one else. Yes, go ahead, Sebastian.
Yeah, I have one question. I am not following in detail at all the technical side of all that and what is happening at the IETF, but do we have some process to be done at the IETF level prior to have those string into the route, or everything it's done to be to allow those string to go to the route as soon as I can finally decide to allow them? Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The answer is that no, we don't need anything else from the IETF in terms of the protocol before the strings that are requested can go in the route. In particular, the ones that have passed the DNS stability panel review are all okay. What may create a little bit of implementation issues for some of them is implementation of IDNs at the second level under those strings. But the top level strings themselves are fine when it comes to the protocol. And of course, this protocol revision is something that's pretty much completed, very close to being completed at the IETF level. That does not mean that it's implemented in all applications and so forth. So we still need Internet Explorer, Firefox, you know, all of the other browsers, any kind of application using IDN to implement that new protocol before it works. And that transition is a transition that TLD registries, IDN PC TLD managers, you know, whatever you want to call these registries, that they need to manage. And it is much more of a subject at the second level than it is for the top level. The top level strings are fine. In terms of support to them at the second level, we are in the process of revising the IDN guidelines. Part of that revision will have to do with guidance towards what can be done in this transition period where application developers go from the old version of the protocol to the newly revised version of the protocol.
Thank you, Tina. Any other questions around the table? And if not, I see no one else in the Adobe chat room. Is there anyone else on the phone bridge who has a question for Tina? I'll take silence as no in this case instead of yes, which is how I usually like to take my silence. And we'll move to Bart. Thank you, Bart. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. It's still morning, so we're catching up. I want to give you a brief overview where we are with regard to the IDN CCPDP process and what is the focus of the discussions this week in Nairobi and for the public comment period. Next slide. Or skip the second one. You can skip this one. Okay. I know it's the best one, but try to catch up time. Just a recap, why is, say, what is the purpose of the IDN CCPDP? There, in fact, are two elements to the PDP. One is a overall policy for the selection and delegation of IDN CCTLDs. Say, the fast track was just, it is not a policy, it is mere a methodology or mechanism to select IDN CCTLDs in the short term, and the overall policy is, excuse me, is for the long term. This part of the PDP is the focus of the current discussions and will be and the focus of this presentation as well. The second element in the PDP is changing the whole of the current Article 9 of the ICANN bylaws, which are dealing with the CCNSO, in order to include the IDN CCTLDs. Currently, the CCNSO is just limited to ASCII CCTLDs, and by the, at the time the structure of the CCNSO was designed, nobody had any expectations of IDN CCTLDs, so that needs to be adjusted in order to include IDN CCTLDs in the CCNSO. After this meeting, this will there will be a working group focusing on this particular topic within the PDP. There will be a call for volunteers, but that will be mostly limited to CCTLD community, and of course there will be room for public comments for other stakeholders. Next slide, please. Yes. Just a bit on where we are with the process. As I said, the current focus of the process is on the selection of IDN CCTLD, so that was the first topic. We've just concluded the topic paper, that is, in this paper, the issues and topics which are relevant and that need to be addressed are described and delineated. We're now in the second phase, that is the interim paper, and that is to structure potential directions for the overall policy and give an idea where we are heading with the overall policy. It is a chair's draft, it is open for public comment, and it will be discussed at the CCNSO meeting tomorrow afternoon, and the public comment period is open until the 2nd of March. If you look at the presentation Tina gave on the fast-track process and the experiences, because this is a very high level, most of the experiences have not been factored in yet. These are will come into the next version, and one important element is not included, that is the one dealing with variants, and the reason why it's not included is, again, what Tina said, the discussions in the technical community and operational implications have not been concluded yet, and you don't want to set policy while these discussions are still going on. Okay, next slide. If you look at the chair's draft of the current interim paper, it is built on a few basic assumptions, and I just will go into these basic assumptions without going into the details of the paper itself. If you want to be involved in that and participate in that discussion, please attend tomorrow morning's meeting at the CCNSO. The first basic assumption is, and that is, again, because of the pre-work of the IDNC working group, which was a combination of all the SOs and ACs with with a relevant interest in the IDNC-CTLDs is we follow as much the structure of the IDNC working group proposals. So principles that shape and structure the recommendations. So if you look at the current paper, you see overarching principles, and these guide the policy itself, and they offer a framework for interpretation in future as well, and they set the stage for the overall policy. The second way in which the IDNC working group proposal is followed is, again, the proposed process will follow it, and so it includes criteria for the selection of IDNC-CTLDs and a description of roles and responsibilities, all the actors involved in that selection process and in the delegation process. I think I've addressed the second point already. Fast track recommendations will be refined and updated to reflect, and the experience of the fast track will be included, and there will be due respect, of course, for the nature of the country code for the policy development process. Next slide, please. Now we're going to more substantive basic assumptions, and one of, I think, the major ones is that the chair's proposal is that IDNC-CTLDs are CCTLDs. It means an equation of ASCII-CCTLDs and IDNC-CTLDs, which also means, which implies that the current arrangements for IDNC-CTLDs and CCTLDs, ASCII-CCTLDs, should be similar in other respects. It also implies, say, the second bullet, the current practices for delegation, redelegation, and retirement, so the policies that apply to ASCII-CCTLDs will apply also to IDNC-CTLDs, with one major difference, and that is probably, it's on the next slide, it is with regard to the selection mechanism. If you look at the way ASCII-CCTLDs are selected, that is ingrained in RSC 1591, that is through the ISO 3166 list, which assigns a two-letter code to the name of a territory, and this policy is mainly focusing on the assigning mechanism of a label to the name of a territory. And another basic assumption, and this will probably need to be thoroughly discussed at tomorrow morning's meeting, and will be discussed probably in the public comments, is the proposal of the chair interim draft are limited to non-Latin scripts. So it means it will not resolve some of the issues on geographic names. The main argument for the selection of limiting to non-Latin scripts is that if we would include ASCII-CCTLDs, you need to address some of the issues in the delegation and redelegation and retirement practices and policies that are already in existence, because they provide a mechanism or a policy for the delegation and selection of ASCII or ASCII script TLDs, CCTLDs. These are, I think, the basic assumptions, and there will be more. These will be discussed tomorrow morning. I've included some references, and one is of the working group itself. Some members of this community are participating in that working group itself. Among one of them is your chair. And the second one is, if you want to submit public comments, here's the URL to submit the public comments. That's all. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Bart. And yes, do we have any questions? I see none in the Adobe room, but I also have a little bit of latency in my copy of the Adobe room, and the blind woman can't see what's going up there. So if you're in the room now and you have a question, Hong, there you are. Go ahead, Hong.
Okay, thanks. We all remember how long it took the new GTLD PDP came into being. So I want to know, is there an initial timeline for this IDNC-CTLD PDP to be completed?
I think you have to distinguish two things. First of all, is the policy development process as is, the policy development process itself. And that will take, I don't want to scare you, but probably 2.5 years. One of the reasons is, as I told you, is it is not just limited to the overall policy, but it's also about changing the structure of the CCNSO. And then we have to go to a very, very extensive voting mechanism, and so that will take at least 2.5 years. A second element why it can take very long is because on the implementation side, and if one of the recommendations will be there needs to be a list like the ISO 3166 list as part of the implementation, that can take 5 to 6 years after the policy development has been concluded. This was one of the reasons why the fast track was initiated in the first place, because you could see this coming, and we don't know how long it will take. So, first of all, you have to distinguish between the policy development process as is and the implementation phase. That is, for instance, a very good example was the fast track itself. We had the working group producing its report, and then you had to go through the implementation phase and the implementation fast track consultations. That will happen with this one as well. And then secondly, it is the implementation phase depends on the outcome of the policy development process, how long it will take. We hope that we can take in the experiences. That's one of the reasons why we want to take in the experiences of the fast track to minimize implementation efforts. But there will be.
Thank you, Bart. Hong, your hand's still up, but I think that's just because I've got this latency issue here. Anyone around the table have a further question? Go ahead, follow up, go on.
When we developed the fast track, one consensus is that fast track is not supposed to preempt the future PDP. So my question is that if a territory has already filed application under fast track, can it still apply under the policy developed through PDP once it's in place?
I think the preemption clause and the concept of preemption was to limit the fast track mechanism as much as possible to allow for a broader range of solutions in the policy development process, because it's not a policy development process. If you look at the chair's interim report, there is a section in it on the transition, how to include, to ensure that all those IDN CCTLDs who've been delegated under the fast track process will be considered IDN CCTLDs under the overall policy. And that was one of the reasons to make the fast track as limited as possible, so you don't have you don't have to grandfather too many IDN CCTLDs.
Thank you, Hong. You're saying nodding yes. That's satisfied. Thank you very much. Calling for anyone on the phone bridge for any questions for Bart. I see no one on the Adobe Connect room, and I see no one around the room, so I think, Bart, your work is done. Thank you most sincerely. We appreciate it, as always. One minor little follow-up. When our communities, remembering that you don't have all the regional leaders around here for reasons I'll discuss over a drink in a bar one night with you, just for now, it's just poor timing, they may want, as they want to prepare their people to put in the regional and local public comments. All of your presentations and everything are public, but is it possible for a community call to be set up? You're willing for that?
Absolutely. Is what the intention is, with at least with this policy development process and with others, is to be as open to the stakeholders as possible. So there are two opportunities, one through you, through the working group itself and your colleague, and secondly, through the public comment. And if additional information is needed or questions, of course I'm willing, and probably we are willing to participate in such a session.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, because, of course, any time we have a community call, it becomes an archive and a resource. And it means that despite time and various other issues, parts of the community, the at-large structures, the people out there on the edges can access it. And that's very, very useful. So we might have our staff talk to you soon. Thank you, Bart.
Please arrange it through Heidi or Matthias.
We will indeed. Our usual thanks, with less people around the table, but thank you very much, Bart. Tina, do not escape if you're still online. Are you still online, Tina?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Fantastic. Matthias brought to my attention in Skype that there was an amendment to your presentation. Because we have the Adobe Connect room recording this meeting and there's also the audio record of the meeting, I was hoping if you were still online, you might speak to that matter before we close off this session and move to David Olive.
Sure. Was this the subject that I brought up to Matthias on Skype?
I guess so, seeing as he immediately passed it on to me.
I'm sorry. I just I'm sitting at home, obviously, participating in the meeting, and I get a chance to, like, read a lot of information and articles online that I don't usually have time to. And one article that came out just today on Circle ID was an article around how we can get IDNs for everyone, and that was in relation to all scripts and all languages, and not just the larger population script, if you can call it that, or language groups, and not just for the rich nations in the world, but for everybody. And so I just thought that that was potentially a great subject for you all to take up into consideration and further IDN discussions to see if there's something we can do to make reaching out to all languages and all scripts a little bit better than it already is. I mean, I think the fast track and the P2P that Bart was talking about, I think we're trying to do as best as we can to make sure that it reaches everybody, but of course, you know, it's hard when you build processes and follow policies to do that. And another area where we do try to keep it open for anybody, no matter what, is the IDN Wiki. But I just thought maybe your members have a lot of good ideas about how we can broaden the scope of that a little bit more than it already is to make it even better. So there's a link to the article there. I made a post to it, and I just thought it was a great subject for you and all of your members to discuss, and I know both Bart and I and everyone else on staff, Matthias and Heidi and everybody, is interested in trying to do the best as possible to help on that subject.
Music to our ears, Tina. Thank you very much for that, and I can assure you that the community will be very, very pleased to take up that gauntlet. It's going to be a pleasure, and I'm going to ask the leaders of the regional at large organisations to put that particular matter onto their agenda for their regional leaders meeting through this week, and then that will be able to come back to our final Thursday meeting for the ALAC. So I guess you've got a perfect piece of timing, because you've just got it when we're all together and all in the mood and all at the right time. I would ask, however, that Matthias puts that link Tina mentioned through into the Adobe Connect room, so we have continuity of the record. And Tina, at whatever particularly nasty hour, I think it must be, what, 1:30 in the morning or something for you by now?
Yeah, it's only 1 a.m. I'm almost on Nairobi time, so it's no problem at all. I'm happy that we have the remote participation. That's really nice.
Well, I was going to say welcome to my world, but most of my stuff starts much later than 1 a.m., but thank you very much. We do appreciate it, and despite a couple of little glitches with remote participation, we're certainly heading in the right direction. So, Tina, these thanks, which may blow the circuits of the audio, I don't know, are coming through directly to you. Ladies and gentlemen, if we can thank Tina for her attention and care with us today. Thank you all. Thank you, Barb. Thank you, Tina. And welcome, David. David, we owe you a small explanation. You might note slightly smaller numbers than are normally seen around this table. There is a reason, and it goes very much to your role. It's how, even at ICANN meetings, policies, discussions, full, frank, fearless and supposedly transparent and accountable activities go on. Because of the way things sometimes happen, it was necessary when we discovered, thanks to our liaison on the board, that there was an agenda that was neither public nor in the best interests of what we believe is the public going to be enacted. And because the public record showed the meeting as public, we've sent our public to that meeting. So, you have far less talent than we had hoped you would be having a round table with, but the others will come back and they'll be all jigged up when they do, I'm sure.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. I don't look to the number of people in the audience. I look to the quality of people. And around this table, I see quality people. And in the remote participation, people staying up at various hours of the day and the night to participate in that. And so to that extent, I thank you. And I don't count the numbers as a quorum for me to appear or not to appear. I'm happy to appear at any time. And so thank you very much. I take this opportunity very seriously, looking as I am just relatively recently part of the ICANN team, assuming the role in February 15th. And when I asked a little bit about time for training, they said, come to Nairobi, and you will be able to learn all that you can. And so I am here to listen and learn. And I'm learning a lot, including the flexible nature of the schedule. I thought I would be here at different times, and lo and behold, pulled in other directions, so that my head is now going to be in a 360 position, and so I am fully flexible for that. But I know we're here to have this roundtable to talk about some of the public policy, policy development process, excuse me. And you heard from one of our senior members, Bart, talking about the new the CCTLDs and the role of the CCNSO. And I thank you for that. That's part of the team. You'll also hear from another group member soon on the RAA. On that very point, I might just say that in preparation for my work, I've been given a lot of materials to read, and one particular document was the RAA, and I was not looking forward to the large documentation, and lo and behold, just before I decided to get into that part of the topic, a layman's guide to the RAA appeared. To which I was very pleased that I could read that and understand that rather quickly. And I understand that is the reason from the recommendations of this group here to have in a plain and understandable language that helps provide background to sometimes legal or technical documents that we know have to be in those precise languages. But it's nice to have that summary that we can relate to in what I would call layman's terms. So I thank you very much for that, and it helped me expedite my understanding of that procedure as well. The other point I might add is that the public comments from this group, the at-large group, and your various networks is vitally important to the public, through the policy development process. And to that extent, I know we try to get these notices out as soon as possible, and we do appreciate hearing from your group and from your group's regional and local representations on this. And so to the note of a community call or some type of further explanation on specific topics, we are, of course, willing and happy to do that. We're trying to find new ways to communicate, in a sense. We had our recent webinar for preparations of the policy issues for Nairobi, As one example, we are also doing podcast recordings so that people don't have to stay up at odd hours of the day or night and can do it at the leisure. And we're looking at these new areas of communication to explain specific topics or explain the policy development process to people. And hopefully that could be useful and used by your group as well whenever needed and in a cost-effective way. And, of course, any ideas of how we can do that even better, we, of course, want to hear about.
Are you willing to take breaks in your sections for questions, or do you want to accumulate them to the end?
I'm happy to take a break for questions at this point.
Okay, because I did think that when we have regional leaders meeting this week and looking very much at how their local outreach needs in the community can be met. We've been intimately involved with the development of the podcasts. We were used as a resource from the very beginning, and it's something that, in fact, our community has been asking for. Let me think, was it Los Angeles? I believe it was. The term Adobe Connect Room was introduced to the world of ICANN thanks to the At-Large Advisory Committee and their use of webinars for calls that we need to make. And we actually, I think, have been the sharp end of the stick in a lot of this. But I have a question. I'm hoping some others will follow through. You said cost-effective. We have a huge outreach requirement, and a lot of it is in multiple languages. We need to engage with the edges of our community, not just in a timely manner, but in a manner that they understand, and there will be cost involved in some of that. So in this affirmation of commitment world, we not now, take it as a question with notice, we would like to think that we will have an engagement, not just at the ALAC level with you and your staff. I mean, we have our staff. I know you own them technically, but we do like to think they're ours, and brilliant that they are. How we manage without Gisela. It's a pity the Africans aren't here en masse, because they'd be standing up applauding and having Matthias and Heidi. They cover us 24/7, and we need to be covered 24/7. But it's very easy to make bottom line judgments on these things. So we'd like to think that there was a possibility also of working directly with the regions, which now Matthias is managing that role. We have monthly regional meetings. We have new possibilities where ICANN's looking at communication, outreach and publicity world. And we have possibilities of being the smartest route of advertising to your marketplace. So we're wanting to find nexus, opportunity and partnership, give a return on investment, but be effectively used. So not so much of a question as a statement, but the question is it the intention under your guidance to have that close relationship between the parts, what we think, you know, GNSO, the relationship's obvious. Other than via the at-large staff, the relationship with ALAC is there, but it's the at-large, it's the ALSs, and it's the regions where the work needs to be done, and guess what, costs are going to come in. Is it not, you know, your gut feeling that that's going to be even possible with current budgetary restraints? We can help, we can translate, we've had offers from the edges to do things. There's ways we can make it cheaper as well.
Thank you for that question, Cheryl. I will, after Nairobi, the next step is the budget step, and we all have comments on the next fiscal year budget, so I'll have to reserve judgment on that. When I said cost-effective, I mean something that was both time and cost that would be able to give the message to the people that need it to disseminate that information. And there is, of course, another kind of budgetary cost factor that we have to look at, and I'll be looking at that going forward.
Sebastian?
Yes, thank you. I must do it in French, but I will not. No, I will not. But you have to know that sometimes it happens that other people speak other language. And I would like to say that I would be very, very interested if we can leverage the amount of work done by our community, because we are always talking about
some dollars spent by in the budget of ICANN. But I can tell you, and you have near you two of the most exemplar people who make no commitment on time. They spend a lot of time working for ICANN issues, and this is not leverage as it must be. Because if we put in front of the time we spend the equivalent of main power, I am sure that your budget will be so tiny that you will be ashamed. Then you have also to take that into account. We are, I will not say a resource, because it's not a good word.
It's a lovely word.
But we are doing, and when I say we, the people around this table, but a lot of people in our community is doing a lot of work, trying to understand, trying to participate, putting ideas, trying to move the ICANN policy in the right direction for the end users. And that's something we need to be taken into account. And when, at the end of this work, we don't have any feedback about our work, that means we put 100,000, maybe more, dollars on the table in our work, the equivalent in our work, and no answer. Just once again, because my colleague already heard me about that, but we put comments on the strategic planning and no one single answer. Yes, we read it. That was great. But where it is taken into account in the document, it's still to be proved and tell to us. Because it's so important that as we don't have this answer, we don't know how to deal with the next step. That's a budgetary process. What we do? You heard us? You're against our proposal? Or you totally agree, but we don't put it in the document, but you can do online the budget with your project or not? We don't know. Then it's a lot of effort put, a lot of time, then a lot of money, and nothing in reverse. Then don't take too much the small amount of dollars you are in your budget with a big amount of time we spend as a community in the ICANN arena. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. I surely, in my past life, had two and sometimes three hats, which were volunteer work for industry associations or global associations that are not necessarily denominated in dollars or pounds or shillings, but are equally as important. And this particular community here, I want to emphasize that I don't mean to downplay, quite the opposite. I mean to praise the quality and the time spent on a volunteer basis by all of you. And indeed, if there is a lack of feedback, I will make sure that there is feedback. I will be here to report feedback, because if there is no commentary from your groups, if there is no suggestions, then the entire process is in jeopardy. And we want to continue to make sure that there is a feedback loop so that there's a positive understanding that what you do and the time you spend is worthwhile and taken up to and including the people that need to know, the president, the CEO, the board chairman, and the like. So, you're right. If there's just commentary without understanding and value, then that is frustrating, and I don't want to see that frustration. And my job to looking at it, though I'm new at it, is to try to make the documents clearer, either through summary and in addition through translation, try to streamline the process if I can. Now, that's not always easy because you cannot hurry people in the consensus process, or you cannot force people on a certain deadline if they have other work to do and other commitments. But as best we can, we'll try to do that. And I don't want to discourage, I want to encourage the at-large at all levels to continue their participation. And believe me, your inputs are valued by many people, including myself.
Thank you, David. That's music to many ears. You might have seen a few nods and smiles, particularly on the feedback. And I'm going to make two related comments here. It is not the situation. We are a far more mature group, and in fact, I would like to posit one of the most valuable assets that ICANN actually has. And so as an asset, we would like to think that the asset was managed properly. And part of the management of assets properly is to know, I guess, how they need to be stored, how they need to be cared for, and how they need to be interacted with. And to interact with community, we don't necessarily want to have the, oh, we agree with you, everything you say is right. That's not going to happen in this type of multi-stakeholder model. We are not suggesting that because we've said it should be blue, it has to be blue. What we are asking for, and in a form that our leaders can take back to those people who spent the most valuable thing they own, their spare time. Not our main leadership volunteers, out there on the streets, over their coffee break, responding to our questionnaires and our inquiries. Their time, we have to say, that had this outcome. It was considered. And it's that lack of measurable, and as you're looking at models, anything that has a measurable, that we can put back in local language, because we can handle that end of it, to say, we didn't get this, but it influenced that. Or this is not a priority now, but will be considered in the future. Or this is fitting in this very generic term. But officially, it's no good for us to say it. ICANN has to say it. Because this is not a conversation over lunch. This is due process in a transparent way, accountable both ways, to ICANN and to the community, on how information gets handled and managed. The other part, which is very much part of the care and feeding of assets, is we need a huge shake-up of how culture and expectations of the simplest courtesies are understood from a, I'm afraid, still very American association. Nice to see you had Fujitsu in there. Pity you're not from somewhere other than America. So you've got a huge butt up with some of our community, and I figured you would know that, and I didn't have to tell you. But the simplest, as you know, because you are well-travelled and you have worked in Africa and you do know Asia, there are certain courtesies, and those courtesies are ignored outright by ICANN in these processes. And I think we can all do a whole lot better. And to some extent, courtesies universally accepted, such as the simplicity of a read receipt, are absent in our processes.
Well, on that very point, one has to be as sensitive as one should be in these international groups, and I'll try my best. I'll just relate a story that one thing I will do is I've given to you what I call my temporary card, my temporary business card from ICANN. In my work, I've always had four or five languages on the reverse side of my card, and I've now talked to ICANN about having that done as well on my new cards, which will hopefully the next time we meet, you'll have it in a language that's familiar to you. But secondly, in terms of being sensitive to where you are and the groups that you're with, I would like just to, if I may digress, yesterday evening, a longstanding friend of mine is the president of the Computer Society of Kenya. And he had asked me to come to a dinner that he was having scheduled for the ICANN meeting and for some of the business constituencies there. And he asked me to speak. And it was kind of a busy schedule. I had another dinner that night, so I had two dinners, but it was worth doing that because of the friendship we had and we continue to have. And at that point, I was able to meet members of his board and to show the courtesy of our friendship over time. And this includes others that I have met throughout my career internationally, that those kind of networks and relationships are important, and I hope to establish them with you and your group.
Thank you. And David, I think I'm fairly safe in saying that there isn't an at-large structure or regional organisation, so that only gives you about 140 direct welcome to my local space, and we will make sure you are well cared for, comforted, fed, watered and introduced to the right people offers now heading your way.
Thank you. On that other point, when you talked about the network that you have at the at-large group, it seemed to me that one should look at how to leverage that in terms of ICANN communications, ICANN linkages. I know we're trying to do that in terms of our monthly policy update, keeping it shorter, putting it into other languages, having that as a usable document. But there are other types of things going forward that might be useful, press releases or background information or whatnot, that disseminated through your network is a first line of the most people most interested in internet matters, in ICANN matters, and that is a relevant way to keep people both informed and to leverage their ability to inform other people through their networks and relationships. And I'm just thinking we'll have to explore more on how this can be done, but to use this wonderful channel of contacts and communications for ICANN materials, but more importantly, to get feedback and a way to encourage them to be involved as a two-way street. My years of experience internationally has been, yes, I am an American, I understand that, but communication should be two-way communication, not one-way communication. And so I have learned that over the many years to have listen and learn, but also listen, talk, and listen as a mode of communication. So you can call me on that if I don't do that, but I hope to do that with everyone, including this group here.
Music to our ears, and of course, what I didn't warn you about, and I hope was made clear to your last visit to us, is everything we say and do is taken down and held against each of us. We are absolutely recorded, transcribed, publicly archived, and posted for anyone to find in any simple Google search. So if you ever do want to say anything in camera, you need to make it very clear you want to say it in camera. Because we only have open meetings, we only have records, we have them in at least three languages. So believe me, careful what you ask for, because you just might get it.
Working for many years with my Japanese colleagues, we would have an expression, no comento, which would be no comment for the record. But what I said, I genuinely mean. A hard task for me to, a high bar for me to achieve, but that is my goal, and I hope to work with everyone to make ICANN a better place to be and to work, and I thank you for this opportunity.
And we'd like to thank you both. I've seen no questions from the online community and the remote participants. Just let me double check. Nothing's coming up on my screen. Is there anyone? I see you, Adam. Is there anyone on the phone bridge who wants to raise a point? If not, the floor is yours, Adam.
I think I'm the only person sorry that you've joined ICANN, because I've lost one of the most helpful sources of telecoms information in Washington, so that's not very fair. Welcome. And I think just to reiterate this problem about getting an acknowledgement is extremely important when we do submit policy recommendations and ideas. If our ideas and comments are not taken into account, say why, I think it's a good practice for good governance of the organisation to respond to all comments and say how they were included and how were they not and why, and is to the greatest extent possible. And it does happen, but not as much as it might, perhaps. And that's would be a great development.
It does, of course, go beyond a tally, which is at least where we are in some cases now. David, thank you for your time, and we all look forward, online, offline, in virtual worlds or otherwise, working with you, and we will eventually forgive you for your Americanism.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and that was my layman's plain-speaking way of saying nice to meet you all and look forward to working with you.
Seriously, okay. She says, finding her glasses and desperately trying to work out where we are next. And yes, we have Beau in the room. So we are now heading towards the Aspirational Registrants' Rights Charter conversation, which was scheduled for not too far off this time, actually. If we had been on perfect timing, you'd have been close for time, but in fact we've skipped over a few things. So, Beau, do you have any materials, or are you just going to talk from up here? Or we've got a handout. Terrific. Is there a link to the handout material for those online? Okay. The for those of you in the Adobe Connect room and on the phone bridge, or for the lower band chat, there is paper materials being handed out at the moment. A link to soft copy of this will be made available while Beau is taking us through this extremely important, and let's face it, this is one of the main reasons we're all here, to get this right. Thank you, Beau.
Thank you. To briefly explain, I'm not sure that everyone is aware what aspirational registrant rights really mean, so I'll give a very brief bit of background. This grew out of discussions from the GNSO-appointed RIA Working Group Subteam A, which was some feedback there, which was intended and chartered to take some existing material from the RIA language and use it to create a consumer or registrant bill of rights, for lack of a better term, that was then supposed to be distributed to registrants that they were to link to from their respective sites. During the process of that discussion, some of us in the community became concerned that the whole operation was just sort of transferring a set of points from one document to another. So that discussion grew into something called the Aspirational Registrant Rights, which basically means the language on registrant rights that is currently in the RAA has been, you know, has gone through the process. It's been approved. We can't really make any changes to it or additions to it. But sometime in the future, we're not entirely sure when, but sometime in the future, we might be able to make additional changes to the RAA. And there are some other folks within the ICANN community who are supportive of that. So this is where we have the Aspirational Registrant Rights wiki page here is where we have been collecting suggestions from anyone who wants to make them as to what we might further like to see in future existing iterations of the RAA. So that's what's meant by aspirational rights. In short, this is like saying, now that the RAA review process is done and finished and kind of wrapped up for now, what is it missing on consumers' and users' behalf? What are some other things it might need? And we're collecting that stuff here. So to just kind of go through some of these briefly, as you can see them here, the first one is have accurate, current, and complete contact and locative information regarding registrars. Although that is currently in the contractual language for the RAA, I believe there's still some issues of compliance remaining among some registrars who are not posting accurate information or some who are not posting any at all. Number two, be the sole entity capable of asserting and changing ownership information for their domain. I think this branches into issues related to there's still some ongoing concerns about the application of principles in the RAA to resellers. And to my knowledge, others may know more, but I don't think the issue of resellers and their behavior and what sort of contract might bind them is still an ongoing concern and one that we should perhaps focus on for the future. Number three, have ample opportunity to renew existing domains at the same rates as new domains. Four, protect trade names against unauthorized use. Five, refuse transfer of personal information to unauthorized bodies. And six, expect ICANN to enforce its agreements with registrars. Although that is somewhat, number six is somewhat open-ended, and we did hear some positive news from the enforcement part of ICANN yesterday. It still remains a fact that there are a number of registrars who are failing to comply with the basic with many of the principles of the RAA, and it has been difficult to get information on specific ones. that have operations in China are the ones mostly of concern, although they have, in both cases I'm thinking of, they have U.S. proxies. So that's really it. What would be very helpful would be anyone in the community who wants to make a suggestion for adding to this, and we have an avenue, I think, through another part of the RAA working group to make a presentation of these aspirational rights. The GNSO Council is aware that the community is working on aspirational rights and that they're going to see them at some point, so it would be great to have additions here from you and additions from the ALSs you represent or just other people in the community. So that's it.
Thank you, Bo. As Cheryl asked me to share this session, I will try to do so. Any question, comment? Hong?
Okay, the draft list looks very good. I just don't really understand the point four. Protect their trade name against unauthorized use. So who are they? Whose trade name? The trade name of registrars or somebody else? I like the point two especially. This is about a kind of a new declaration of property rights over domain names. Let's see whether they will really be integrated with the legal system and really become an exclusive rights over this virtual property.
Bo?
I can't specifically answer the question about item number four. Evan and I together sort of collected these, so I guess I would have to refer back to whoever the author of that particular aspirational right is for more detail. So we can do that if it's unclear.
Thank you, Bo. Anybody online want to talk, to ask question? Okay, not online, but in the room, Adam.
Is it all right to go on to sort of additional comments rather than just on the six? I mean, are we at that stage?
Yeah.
As an addition, and it's not quite specific enough to draft, but I think some policy or some reference to requiring registrars to make prominent reference to all policies that they've agreed to under ICANN consensus policy, particularly those that are registrant facing, such as what happens with deletions, what happens with grace periods, so that the registrant has an understanding of what their relationship is with their domain, if you like. So it would be prominent display of registrant affecting policies, I suppose, of some kind. Is that making sense, what I'm trying to suggest?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think it's a good idea. If you want to just send that to me in an email, or if somebody is taking notes and could just capture that and add it to the wiki, or I could add it to the wiki. The purpose of this page up here to the left is that we certainly would hope that anyone who's interested, like Adam, would just add statements like that here. And I wouldn't even necessarily worry at this point about, editing, or just ideas are even good at this point, and we can further develop them as we get closer to a point where we want to make a case.
Thank you, Bo. Any other additional? As Evan come back to the room, maybe Bo, you can ask him the question. You wanted some feedback from him. Evan, if you can listen, please.
Evan, the question came up about if you look at the document that's up on the screen to the left.
I know it well.
Yes. Number four, I think there was some issue of clarity as to what exactly item number four meant, and I didn't write it, so I don't know. Do you?
Okay, number four.
Hong is the one who had the question, so she may just want to ask you directly.
I just meant in general that if a registrant was somebody who conducted business in a certain way, that they had a right not to have what they were doing either fished or otherwise compromised. And the point behind a document like this is it's meant to be fairly broad at this level. So I didn't think it was necessary to go into a level of detail. I just meant at a general level that somebody that operated a business under a certain name had a right not to have that name either taken from them, abused, fished, typo-squatted, or otherwise compromised. That was the intent. Whether or not that's agreeable or not is certainly up for debate, but that was intended as a... This whole thing was meant as a straw man for people to bash at anyway, essentially as a starting point from which we could do something else. I don't know if that answers the question, but it's the best I can come up with right
Evan,
now.
Evan, in clarification, so there meant the registrant.
This is a registrant's document. This is a statement of registrant's rights, and that's all I was intending to cover.
Just that clarification.
Ah.
Thank you, Evan. Ong, you want some more additional thought, or you will work with this document and come back with some ideas?
One second. Thanks, Evan, for your interpretation on their trade name rights. There means registrants. Okay, now I understand that. The issue here is that, so who are you claiming this right against? You mean registrars?
Sorry. One other thing about the way this is worded. The actual preface is before these bullet points is the word registrants shall have the right to, colon, and then each of these flows from that. I don't know if that makes this any clearer, but the intention was registrants have the rights to have accurate, current, complete, be the sole entity, and so on. I don't know if that clarifies the wording at all, but that was the original intent.
Okay, thank you, Evan. I guess we exchange on that subject, and everybody around the table knows that they could participate in this work. You want a final word, even? I would like to finish this part of the meeting and give back the chair to our chair.
Okay. Obviously, I wasn't around here to hear what Bo said. I can probably add some interesting feedback based on what just went on upstairs, where the whole issue of without going into specific issues such as consumer constituencies, which we can go into later, specific issues relating to rights were brought up. And what was interesting is that Avery Doria, who was chairing the meeting, brought this up, and that the idea that it was important to get into assertions of rights, immediately after which Peter Dengate Thrush said, maybe this is something that that ALAC should be taking a role in. And some faces did go sour. The other thing that was important, and it hadn't been mentioned, so I put my hand up as a non-board, non-NCUC person there, just to remind them that ALAC and GNSO had actually been working on registrants' rights things. Ironically, GNSO and ALAC, with nobody from NCUC participating, which I don't think they quite liked either. I was actually quite pleased with the exchange that went upstairs. Olivier, who was there, made the observation that Rod and Peter were basically doing a good cop, bad cop number. And it was actually very nice. Debbie, who is the person from the Red Cross there, who has been, injected into the proceedings, made some extremely useful comments. And it looks like she's actually working on creating a humanitarian / service agency constituency. Anyway, I can give more later, but that's my bit for now.
Thank you. And as we suspected, there is a clear nexus between our at-large and the edges of the communities we serve and need and what was going on in other rooms. And so I thank each and every one of you who gave up, important conversations here to go and do what you should be doing best, which is represent at-large, lower and uppercase, at-large. So thank you one and all. I hope you've had time to have a slight deep breath and a sip of water somewhere, because we're going straight as soon as Cheryl puts on her eyes to see where we're heading. Ah, that's what you're here for, Margie. The non-lawyers RAI guard. Sorry, Sylvia, go ahead. My apologies, dear.
Siguiendo la idea que dijo Evan con respecto al trabajo de Debra, yo le pedí la tarjeta, le di mi tarjeta, le pedí la tarjeta porque me pareció muy interesante el trabajo que ella está haciendo y la división que ella está haciendo con las organizaciones que ella toma cuenta, y me pareció de repente una idea que nosotros podemos venir a implementar en el ALAC. Entonces después les cuento sobre eso, pero me pareció muy interesante.
Thank you, Sylvia, but can I also ask that you particularly talk to Dev and to Andreas to make sure those same ideas get on the agenda table for the regional leaders meeting? Because it's essential for ALAC, but it's even more essential for at-large, and that's the RALOs and the ALSs. Notice I'm doing a lot of pushing down to the next layer lately. But get used to that. It's going to be a song you'll hear for pretty much the rest of my term of office anyway. Margie, welcome back. We kept the seat warm. There's been a number of people on there, but none of them have been game enough to come have two bites of the cherry with us in the one day. So, but something that I think, you know, we're all very pleased to hear about, which is the Lawyers RIA Guide. Floor is yours, Margie.
Sure, and as many of you recall, it was the at-large that asked for this document. The document was put together with work through the legal department. Samantha Eisner in the legal department at ICANN tried to take the registrar accreditation agreement and simplify it so that a person who's not a lawyer, who's not trained in U.S. legal principles, could look at it and understand what the RAA does. And so so the work, you know, it took a bit amount of time, and mostly to get the language right and to try to take out the legalese, you know, the lawyer's phrasing that doesn't make sense to most non-lawyers. But we're pleased that we were able to do that and to release it in February. And I don't know if you want me to walk you through the document itself, or do you guys have questions about it? I'm not sure what the best way of dealing with this is, but I'm certainly here to do whatever you prefer.
Well, I'm going to, first of all, open it to the floor, but then ask the remote participants, because I'm confident about the knowledge level around the table. I'm less confident about the remote participants. So unless someone around the table objects, and you never know, I always find whenever I review something, I often learn something new. I'm going to ask Margie to give at least some synopsis points, because it's the Adobe Connect and the remote participants which may indeed value, and it forms part of a recorded archive as well. Thanks, Marcia.
Okay. So I'll provide a brief overview. Essentially, as I indicated, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement is an American document, and so that it's written to comply with California law. And so what this document does is try to take out some of those principles and simplify it so you can understand what the registrars have agreed to do in the contract with ICANN. This is a contract between ICANN and the registrars, and it forms the basis for them becoming a registrar. We start off with an overview that basically describes what the domain name registration process is. So the nice thing about it, it's in Section 1. If you're not familiar with the way the domain name registration process works, we've provided an overview, even though it's actually not in the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. But we thought that was useful in order to give people background when they read the document. The other thing to note is that every ICANN accredited registrar has to sign the same agreement. So this particular document that is the RAA is the same terms that apply to every registrar. ICANN does not negotiate on a case by case basis with registrars. So we highlight the fact that it is a standard agreement. when a registrar applies for accreditation, they have to provide certain information to ICANN related to their financial and technical business matters. And when they sign this agreement, there's three parts to it. The first agreement is the main agreement, and then there's also appendices that apply. So if you're a registrar and you want to carry .com, you have to sign an exhibit for the .com agreement. If you want to be a .net registrar, you have to sign an addendum for that. So we explain how there are several documents that relate to the RAA. We also clarify that registrars are not allowed to make claims that they can provide registered name holders with superior access than other registrars. In other words, there's a concept that all registrars have to be treated the same by registries, and so registrars are not allowed to say that they have preferential treatment or better access to a registry than any other registrar. The RAA has five main sections. One is a definition section, and then there's a section that talks about ICANN's obligations to registrars, and then there's a section that deals with the registrar's obligations to ICANN. And then there's a section four that deals specifically with creating new specifications and policies, and this is something that I talked about earlier today. This is the part of the registrar accreditation agreement where we can bring in consensus policies. So, for example, when the GNSO Council develops policies in a particular area, such as transfers or deletions, the way that the registrars are obligated to comply with it is that they agree in the contract that if this policy is adopted and it's within certain parameters, that they will be bound by the new policy. So that's a very important part of the registrar accreditation agreement. Oh, I didn't know Sam was here. Yes, Sam. I didn't realize that. Hi, Sam. For those of you who don't realize, Sam's in our legal department, and she's the author of this document, and we really thank you for all the time and effort that you put in doing this, because it is a difficult process. And Sam, I don't know if you want to chime in on any of the things that I'm saying. I mean, certainly you're welcome to.
I do think you're doing a great job going through the document. As Margie noted before, there was a lot of effort, and it wasn't just my effort put into this. Margie and her colleagues in the policy department really provided a lot of input and really helped get it to a point to make it a little bit more understandable than us lawyers tend to be able to do. So thanks a lot.
Okay, I'll continue on. Some of the things that might be interesting to you is that in the agreement, as part of the registrar obligations, there's the one provision that talks about the Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, the UDRP. And as you remember, because everything is contract-based at ICANN, the way we get the registrars to comply with the UDRP is by referencing it in the contract. And so there's actually a section in the agreement that talks about that. There's also a section that talks about the kind of data that registrars have to provide to the registry operators, and this is the typical who is information. So that's incorporated into the registrar accreditation agreement. The document also talks about obligations that registrants have related to who is information. You know, there's the obligation to keep it accurate and to respond within a certain amount of time if there's questions about the accuracy of the who is information. And so if you have any questions about the obligations of a registrant, it's really nice to now refer to this document and you can, and hopefully it's more clear. The agreement also has a provision that deals with escrow of the registered name holder data. So, in other words, all registrars are obligated to provide all the information for the registrants to be escrowed in the event that they go out of business, for example. And so there needs to be a way for the information to be transferred in the event that there's a problem with accreditation or the registrar goes out of business. Uh, There's also the section that talks about how registrars deal with registrants. And it talks about the fact that a registrar may not activate a domain name until it receives reasonable assurance that the registration fees will be paid. And it talks about the types of actions that a registrar can take when the registration period is over in the event that there hasn't been a renewal. And so if there isn't a renewal of the domain name, the registrar is to delete the domain name within 45 days at the end of the registration term. But there are exceptions to this rule, and it's described in this guide. There's also a section in the RAA that talks about what needs to be in the agreement between a registrar and a registrant, and that's called the registration agreement. And that is where the registrants agree that they must provide accurate and reliable contact data and promptly correct it during the registration term. And if the registered name holder intentionally provides inaccurate information or fails to update it when it's been contacted by the registrar within 15 days, that is deemed a material breach of the contract and the registration may be canceled. So that's part of what's actually in the RAA, and that's how some of the obligations that registrants have are created, because it's incorporated into the RAA. I'm just scamming. I don't know how much detail to go into, but I mean, is this helpful?
Okay. As I said, particularly because we're very keen to ensure we have one opportunity now to get an archival record in three languages, that is a hugely useful resource that you're creating while we're talking about this.
Okay, great. And there's also a new section in the RAA that deals with registrar obligations for the acts of others, and this is part of the 2009 amendment process that took place recently. And essentially, there's a provision that says that if there's common ownership between a number of registrars, and we see that in the marketplace, that some registrars are owned by a common parent, that they are responsible for the obligations of their commonly owned registrars, and they may be in breach of the RAA if their affiliated registrars are in breach of their agreements. So there's a kind of a check there to make sure that all commonly owned registrars are in compliance with their agreements. And then for the first time, there's actually a reference to reseller relationships in the RAA now. There are obligations with respect to registrars who deal with resellers. And that's, referenced there. There's also a requirement that, and this is very helpful, came out of the 2009 amendment process, that registrars will cooperate with ICANN, and particularly in completing a training course. We're trying to make sure that our registrars are all on, up to date on their obligations and requirements. And so ICANN is currently in the process of developing a training course for registrars, so that they are brought up to date. And this is useful in particularly registrars that are abroad that may not have the ability to come to ICANN meetings and learn all the information that we're able to learn when you're here in present.
Just a question on that then. It may be preempting a question. Adam, you have your hand up in the room. Is it a question for this section? Oh, okay. It could also be the lag on this beast that they've got me using here. That I'm referring to a computer, not a real beast, for those listening to the transcript. One of the questions that we want to get some feedback on is how we can make better leverage out on the edges. But to that end, is it possible for those out working with registrars and being, at large structures, they're going to be seeing some of these issues, to encourage people to say we would like that sort of training? How is that being rolled out so that in the middle of Africa, when there's a clear need identified by our part of the community, how do they encourage?
I think that's a question more for the registrar relations team. And I don't know if Tim Cole is going to come talk to you or someone from his staff, but they're actively working on this program. And I don't know, Samantha, if you know anything about that. I'm not that familiar with that program.
Margie, I think you're right. I know that Tim and his team are actively working on it, and they are in good outreach with the registrars. And so to the extent that there are concerns, the registrars should be encouraged to contact Tim and his team.
It's just nice to have a mechanism on the record that you know, people can be encouraged to follow up on. Thanks. Sorry, back to you.
Okay. And then the RAA also has termination provisions, obviously, that talk about, how I can terminate an agreement. And there's, arbitration provisions, for example, if there's a dispute related to the termination. There's also, for the first time, this came out of the 2009 agreement, that there's additional compliance tools available to ICANN. For example, ICANN has the right to suspend a registrar's ability to register new names if they're, in breach of the RAA, or they can face suspension for a failure to cure the RAA within a proper amount of time. There's a little more detail there that wasn't there before, and so I know the compliance team is really happy about these additional sanctions that are incorporated now into the RAA. And there's also a provision about acquisition of registrars. In the past, registrars could be acquired, and ICANN wouldn't be involved in the process at all. And now there's a procedure that if a registrar provides notice, if a registrar is to be acquired by another entity or a business, they have to provide notice to ICANN and certain information to make sure that the registrar has the ability to meet the accreditation requirements. And so that's useful because it gives ICANN notice that there is a change in ownership and the ability to go look at it and see if there's any problems posed with the accreditation. And I think that's basically it. There's also a glossary if you want to look at some definitions at the end of the document. There's definitions of CCTLD, GTLD, registered name holder, all of that. So it's useful just to provide an overview of what the registration process is all about.
Thank you, Margie. And Sam, need to give particular thanks to you because it strikes many of us around this table as quite a challenge for a lawyer to write a non-lawyer's guide. And so we do appreciate you probably have to sort of stretch yourself quite widely to not fall back into familiar language and constantly rethink. But to some extent, perhaps you understand from our side why it's such a valuable exercise. And it is a hugely useful and valuable document. And to that end, I think our community, because we've discussed this at our most recent meeting, would like to know in the next steps, because we want to value this and make great use of it, how do we now take it into all of the local languages? Note, I'm not saying the six UN languages. I'm saying the local languages that would benefit by this. Can we come to some sort of this is a standardised text and soft copy can be downloaded in the following. We'd like to just explore, no putting things and, there's no blood required here, but just explore with us if that's a possibility.
So I'm not sure if Margie mentioned this, but you'll note that at the top of the document it states draft. And this document, of course, was generated out of the request from you, Cheryl, and was drafted really to assist the at-large community, the end users of the Internet, but it's also a tool that will be used by all members of the ICANN community. And part of the reason that it's draft is because we recognize it as a living document. So I'm not sure that the text will ever be final, but of course that hasn't stopped us from moving forward with the translations into the six UN languages. And to the extent that additional translations are helpful and necessary to assist the at-large community, I'm sure that Heidi and Matthias can assist in that. There's no legal barrier from having it translated.
Thank you. That's really very helpful because we already identified our need for Portuguese and we haven't even looked in Asia Pacific yet. But when it comes to that plethora of languages, it may very well be not full print run. You know, it might need to be looked at a prioritised order. We need to work with you to... We can't meet all needs instantaneously and there is cost-benefit analysis to be done and we recognise that as long as we can establish a mechanism to do that.
And to that end, if there are particular portions of this document that you believe may be more helpful, I'm sure that with the at-large staff, we can work to take out the portions and just note that it's part of a broader document and also make sure that there are the correct caveats, because I am a lawyer. I do like to see caveats in documents to state that this is a translation of a summary document. So it's two levels removed, really. But we would surely be happy to work with you to cut out sections. I'm not sure that would involve pairing of language, but we could cut out sections with you.
Thank you very much. Okay, in speaking order at the moment for questions, and if people can just indicate now if they want to be added to the queue, because I'm not planning on leaving this as a long queue. I have Evan, I have Beau, I have Fatimata. Is there anyone else who wishes to raise a question or discuss this matter? If not, we'll actually close the queue there, because we do want to try and catch back to our time. Thank you, Evan. Go ahead.
Hi there. I wanted to ask to what extent you think this is a companion document to the draft summary of registrant rights that was done last year. I posted the link up in the Adobe chat room, and I think you folks were actually involved with that as well. What it did was it extracted point by point to say, here's your rights and here's the wording that actually refers to it. I think the two documents are very complementary and go together very well. I would just like to suggest maybe that as you put this forward as a published public document, you may want to consider literally having the two together and accessible the same way.
It's not a bad idea because you're right. The language is very similar, but the Registrant Rights Charter is a smaller document and not as complete as this document, so it may be helpful for those who are interested in learning more to click to this document and have it easily accessible. So that's a very good idea.
Evan? Sorry, Beau?
Yeah, I was going to ask if there is a mechanism for which there's some interesting discussion about the document that didn't come up in the meetings that we've had before on it taking place in the chat room. So I don't know if this is the place to analyze what's being said, but I just want to make sure that it gets captured and reflected in the further iterations.
Did you want to read those to the record? Because it will be in the recorded space, but I'm happy for you to do.
Well, the chat's part of the record, right?
It should be. I'm assuming, chat stays as part of the record.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So we'll just have to note that. Thank you. Fatimata.
Thank you, Cheryl. I would like to make a suggestion, maybe, and I don't know if... It's in French? Okay. Okay. Tant mieux. Donc, vous mettez vos casques. Non, on va parler français une fois. Oui. Donc, je voudrais savoir. Je vais essayer de faire une proposition. En fait, je ne sais pas si c'est recevable ou pas. Mais c'est par rapport à nos difficultés. Stop. Ça va? OK. Je recommence. Donc, je disais que je voulais faire une proposition. Je ne sais pas si ce sera recevable ou pas. Mais la justification, c'est que les problèmes que nous avons au niveau régional pour faire des programmes pour engager plus d'utilisateurs finaux dans les politiques, dans les discussions au niveau de ICANN, c'est d'abord le renforcement de capacités. Est-ce que, au niveau local, ICANN pourrait ajouter parmi les critères de sélection la volonté du registrant de participer aux activités de renforcement de capacité au niveau local et en retour que ICANN leur fasse une faveur par rapport au capital, je veux dire à l'investissement qu'ils vont mettre pour le renforcement des capacités locales, puisque jusqu'ici, nous demandons un appui et c'est difficile d'avoir un appui pour mener ces activités de renforcement au niveau régional, au niveau local. Merci.
I don't know that I can address that. It's really a question for the registrar liaison team. I do know that Tim Kroll and his group often have regional meetings throughout the world.
We didn't know that. No?
No,
it's a bone of contention.
I'm sorry.
Give them, they know not what they do.
That's right. But I do know that is part of their program to try to go out there and to, you know, go to the various regions. I suppose Heidi may want to talk to Tim about more coordination with the at-large community.
Or maybe not.
Okay, Fatimata, what I hear and what we will continue to do is find ways to ensure that there are opportunities for this to get on agendas, and we will keep working on it because it is essential, as we recognise that supply and demand have opportunity to share space, share experience and share stories. And that is what I hear you asking for. So we will continue to work on that. That was just a classic moment, and later someone will explain to you in gory detail, I'm sure, why we had such a wonderful reaction. Okay. Is there any other questions before we thank particularly Sam for the heroic effort that she's done, and Margie for coming back into the hot seat yet again? And truly, I it's easy to look around the room with only these few people, but you know, take a note of how many you've got online. Recognise that what you've done is making huge impact out at the edges where it actually needs to be done. And we thank you very, very deeply and very, very seriously. It can't have been easy. We appreciate it. And in our usual way, thank you for the presentation and the product.
And thank you for the recognition, but I do hope it does not go unrecognized, the amount of work that other people within ICANN put into this effort, particularly Heidi and Margie and their teams for spending countless hours and reviewing the countless iterations of it and providing very substantive comments to take it to where it is today.
Nicely said, nicely noted. And, of course, we expect this superb work from these people. We're getting used to this. They've set the benchmark. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to take as short an amount of time as I possibly can, and that really is going to be now up to the presenters. I do want to complete now in this session, before we have whatever necessity breaks we need, and in fact more of us, are back in the room by 2 p.m. for the all-important meeting with the Structural Improvements Committee and the Board Governments Committee. I do, however, want to give Dev and Carlton time to show the other regional members, the leaders, and the rest of the ALAC some pretty amazing and very useful things, which I would like to think, subtle hint to all regional leads at the table, other regions might pick up on. It's a wonderful piece of work, and I really, really appreciate it. Carlton, I might ask you to squeeze the PAD as much as you can to just compensate for that. Thank you. So a hand over now to Dev, and final word from Carlton. Then without any due haste, you can all get up, go away, try and stretch, buy a bottle of water or whatever it is you need to do. Yes, go ahead, darling.
Can we leave our computers in this room over lunchtime?
Well,
no.
Unless I get to steal them, yes, I'll be here. I won't be able to move. So literally, I
Alan's shaking his head, so I don't think he trusts you.
We'll sort that out later. Okay. It's also given enough time for Dev to be almost set up, so that's quite useful as well. Just to remind you all, and please let anyone else know that you see out there in that lunch break time, 2 o'clock, back here. We have to get back onto our timed agenda. All right? Are we set? And we're ready to go. Push your microphone and you're off.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, let me just quickly start with the improving the PAD. Now, the PAD, for those who don't know, is the Policy Advice Development Schedule, which gives an overview of the status of formal statements currently being prepared by ICANN's at-large community. Currently, it's implemented as a Google spreadsheet, and I'll just quickly switch to it right now. Right. And I'll increase the text size. So that's the existing policy advice development schedule that was being used for most of last year. The problems with it, though, is that it's tedious to maintain because you have to update every single field inside that document. You have to, if you scroll, there's a lot of information there to process. And because it's tedious to maintain, it's not up to date. Because if you look at it, I mean, you're not even seeing like a lot of the work that's already been done by the at-large community, you know, for at-large board selection process, etc. So, what myself and Carlton attempted to do was to try to figure out a way to improve this process. I'll just go back to. And here's the current version that we've come up with. One, two, three, and four. Four is the charm. Okay. Don't know why it's doing this. Okay, so let me just refresh this. And actually, okay. Could you also increase the pad? No, no.
Are we okay?
Yeah, we're okay. Right, public comment. So what we've done is this first slide, this first section, public comment. This is actually read directly from the ICANN's public comment website. It actually scrapes the website, scans all the titles, and scans the URL for more details, the opening date for comments, and the closing date for comments. So this is done automatically without any user intervention. And you'll notice the second column there is the policy on the pad or not. And I try to color code it so you know if something's not on the pad, it stands out and requiring action. Let me just now go to the pad itself. Now, the pad now has several sections, and perhaps maybe Carlton, if you want to talk about the actual ideas behind how we should treat policies and so forth.
Yeah, very quickly. What we're trying to do here is see if we can get the trains to run on time. And we're trying to use a process and create a workflow for how we do it. So we start by proposing that this is a workflow we ask for. You get the announcement, we populate it on the pad, and then we have some timelines that is laid out. And these are all variables. You can change them. It is just my idea of what the timeline should be. You start from when the announcement is going to close, and we kind of work backwards and try to get the various areas of the at-large involved in developing. The first thing we want to do is to find out whether or not have a decision as to whether or not we should respond to this. Is this something that we should get to? And if we say yes, formal response, then there is a process that begins. You have to go to notice if there's a work group set up. It has to go to the work group. and then the work group has the time to develop an advisory. The advisory, there's some time for the advisory to be commented on. Then following the comments, then there's time for a proposal to be made to the ELAC for a vote. There's some time between this proposal and the vote. And then we have a vote, and it becomes an official advisory from ELAC. At all of these milestones, we try to kick off automated emails and other notifiers to the various groups. This one's a little involved because we have so many groups that we have to keep involved. And so we're trying to figure out how we could simplify the communications challenge. See, we have the work groups, we have the individual RALOs and RALO leadership, we have the XCOM, we have blah, blah, blah. So we are thinking that we should simplify the communications challenge by simply putting in timed reminders to the lists as often as we possibly can. So we send time reminders to the list. And this is all automated. And then to the head of the work group or so, the chair of the work group or so on. We're really trying it's a huge communication task, even though we can automate a lot of it. The problem is you don't want to automate too much that becomes spam. So we're trying to stay on the line between communicating and spamming somebody. And that's not going to be easy. But that's essentially what we're trying to do here. Remember, all of these milestones are linked as variables in an automated procedure. We can actually go in and change any of the variables. So if somebody objects and says, this is too short, too long, we can go in and change the variable. Individually, on every single announcement, or as a group. So that's it, basically.
Okay, let me just try to show you what I try to automate. And one of the tools I've been using is something called Google App Script. And what essentially that is, it's essentially JavaScript, which allows you to manipulate the various Google apps, the Google Docs, spreadsheets, calendar, and so forth. So the idea of the workflow will be something like this. You go to a policy that's one policy, and you click on ICANN Power Tools, and you add the policy from public comment to the pad. So when it runs, it will insert it on the pad, and if you notice, it pre-fills all of the information there at one time. You have the policy issue status, the date open for comment, and then what it does, it calculates the deadlines needed for each process step, the date for no notice to be sentenced to at large, and so forth. Now, what we can then do is, if you want to update the status, and I've just did it for the first step, but update policy status, it will run it and then send an email to the notice list. And if you notice here, you see that it's a green indicating that the email was sent. And if I check my email, there you go. The notice comes up, and I've done a little bit of formatting in HTML.
It just simply says right now, look, but we can get more sophisticated.
Yes.
With the email, what we put in the email. Yeah. And the challenge is to keep it simple or get it sophisticated.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to need some help as to what the requirements are to make it work.
So by saying update status, you see that the status is now changed for that policy. And again, I try to make it more flexible because while we want to automate it, I don't think we want to automate it to the extent that it runs through every single policy and churns out hundreds of emails, because I think then everybody will just shut down. You have to go to each policy. My intention is that you go to each policy and then you update the status of it. And if you wanted to change the dates and so forth, like, okay, let's say for some reason, you get an objection to a date, whatever it is, you can then change that date and it will automatically recalculate. If you wanted then to reset the status, you just clear this field and resend the information again to the list. So that's it for the improving the path status. Yeah.
Well, I think that's an incredibly useful tool. It's certainly something that I suspect a number of the regional leaders might be thinking could be applicable locally as well. So you're part of that team, so I guess you've got this under commons anyway. So is there any particular questions? I'm very impressed. Evan, go ahead.
One of the things I noticed that ALAC runs into is that there's various issues that require different, shall we say, levels of expediency. And there's some issues of priority where, okay, we come up with an issue and the issue goes to the RALOs and the RALOs go back to the ALSs. It takes some time, but you get complete buy-in. Then there's going to be some things that, for whatever reasons, it came up 2 weeks ago and there needs to be a statement. And at that point, there has to be a process that at least says, okay, the ALAC is there because it's been entrusted by the regions to make certain decisions, occasionally has to do some things.